This week.
Oh.
Deezer.
It's not you.
The CMU podcast in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Deezer, Radiohead, Get It Right, and Adele. I'm Andy Malt, editor of CMU. With me is Chris Cook, business editor of CMU. And Chris, you've jetted in from Bilbao, especially for this podcast.
That's almost half true. So well done for starting the podcast with an almost half truth. I've been to Bilbao, that's the point. I was at the BIME, I think that's how you say it, the BIME
BIME.
Conference.
BIME, well, you wouldn't call a conference BIME, would you?
That was what I was calling it until about 2 weeks ago when Kev, who runs The Great Escape, I told him I'm going to this thing in Bilbao called BIME. And he's like, I'm pretty sure it's called BIME. And it's like, that probably makes more sense for a Spanish festival, although it's in the Basque region and the Basque have their own language. So it's wrong for us to assume that every word has to sort of be a stereotypical Spanish word with it, sort of a vowel at the end.
Yeah, but no one would call something BIME.
Would they not?
No, that would be ridiculous.
Anyway, it's a nice little conference, takes place in Bilbao.
What does it stand for?
It does stand for something.
Yeah, that was my question. Was
I'm
what?
Going with the Bilbao International Music Exchange. What else could the E be for? Encounter?
Exorcism?
Could be exhibition, although it's not really an exhibition. It has a particular focus on sort of tech and gaming and other sort of entertainment and digital industries coming together, although it has a big music focus, and that's what I was talking about. I was on a panel. It was a great panel. Not just because, obviously, I moderated it very well, although I think I did. I think everyone would agree I moderated it very well.
Well, I hope it was recorded because I'm going to check.
But it helped that I had a brilliant panel. It was a real mixed panel. We had Simon Raymond from Bella Union, who, if you ever go to a conference and Simon Raymond from Bella Union's on a panel, make sure that's the panel you go and see.
Yes.
Simon really balances being sort of a veteran of the music industry as both an artist and a label owner who has lots of great stories from, you know, over the last 30 years, how long as a musician?
Yeah.
That long. But then it is very much running a label that's constantly signing new talent, constantly putting out records. So it has both the balance of sort of the old timer great stories from days gone by, but very much sort of has lots of opinions about how the music industry is operating today. And was talking about the fact that, you know, their CD sales are doing well. And also he backed up my point on CD sales, which is, because we've talked about this, not on the podcast, I don't think. But
we've talked about it.
That CD sales are still quite strong in the UK. I mean, I think this year will be the first year where the record industry's revenues in the UK will be split pretty much three ways between streams, downloads and CDs. Now, obviously, CDs are not as profitable as downloads and streaming, but that's still a lot of CDs being sold.
Yeah, it is.
And it's like, well, who the hell is who's buying all these CDs? And I think a lot of people assume, well, it's clearly old people. It's old people buying those CDs.
But no, it's not. It is.
Well, old people are buying CDs. But Simon said, backed up something which actually the Entertainment Retail Association said to me from their market research earlier this year. But he was doing it from anecdotal evidence of, you know, go down to Rough Trade, any of the Rough Trade stores, pick one in the East End on a weekend, and there's a lot of people clearly in their early 20s busy buying up CDs. So that was interesting. So it was a great panel. It was a great event. But I zoomed back. Is that a word?
Zoom.
Zoomed back.
Well, that's two words.
I flew back to be here to record the podcast because you remember the torture that it was having me phoning in from Edinburgh to do the podcast.
Imagine, well, also you didn't have a hotel room booked, so you had to fly back.
Well, I could have booked another hotel room. It's not that there were no rooms left in Bilbao.
Are you saying Bilbao's not very popular?
So I chose to come back for this podcast because I was that desperate to talk to you, Andy Malt, about the Deezer IPO, about Radiohead's litigation, about Adele doing stuff, and about Get It Right from a genuine site.
Yes, I did abbreviate that in the intro.
You did.
But I mean, that's because Get It Right from a Genuine Site is a very unwieldy name for anything.
It is. We should say we're recording this podcast slightly later in the day than we usually do, so it's dark outside, so that's a bit weird.
Yeah, but it's winter, it's always dark. Also, 24 hours now in London.
Despite this incredibly long intro.
It's quite long, isn't it?
We're on a slight rush with this week's podcast. Not quite,
you wouldn't guess.
Not quite the rush that we were on with the podcast, whenever that was, 3 or 4 weeks ago, where we rushed through it in like 38 minutes. So, but having said that, we do have quite an unmovable deadline, and I have now used up about 8 minutes of this podcast talking about nonsense. So you should take charge and move on the agenda.
Yes, I've let this podcast get out of control. Watch me claw it back. Deezer, you mentioned Deezer's IPO. Deezer's not having an IPO, you idiot.
No IPO.
No.
No.
So, right, that's that story done. Move on.
If you are the public, okay, if any of you out there are the public and you were looking forward to Deezer's initial offering to you, it ain't happening.
No. So it was supposed to be happening this Friday.
It was. So
in fact, today as the podcast goes
indeed.
Out.
And we were going to have it as a Deezer IPO special, weren't we?
We were. We planned it all out.
The entire show. Rather than recording it on Thursday, we were going to record it on Friday morning so we could have the very latest, you know, figures from the Paris Stock Exchange on how the shares were going. All called off.
But no. In fact, we did actually discuss this at some length about a month ago on the podcast.
When they announced
the IPO. And that was a bloody waste of time, wasn't
it? It was.
Because they've cancelled the whole thing.
I'm going to go back into the archive because some people do listen to it. I don't know why. but we still have people listening to our podcast from 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I hope they're not thinking that the EMI is being sold.
Well, sometimes I feel like I should go back and listen to them and see what we said, but then I can't be asked.
But perhaps we'll go back and we'll delete the entire long, drawn-out conversation about Deezer's IPO that didn't happen. So, Deezer need more money. Because they're a streaming company. And if you're a streaming company, you need more money.
They all need more money.
Because God knows you're not making enough from your ad sales and from your subscriptions.
From your product.
So you need somebody to put some money in. And we knew earlier this year that Deezer were planning a new funding round. So people like, I mean, Orange were the big backer of Deezer back in the early days. Deezer grew out of France. Orange is owned by France Telecom. So they were one of the early backers. Then Access Industries, who own Warner Music, pumped a load of money. He actually, I think, the guy who owns Access Industries.
Yeah, funny enough, Access Industries is someone's actual name.
Yeah, Mr. Industries, Access to his friends.
Len Blavatnik.
Him. I think, actually, because obviously when you do an IPO, you have to put out loads of information about your business, and I think he's probably the biggest single shareholder now in the company. We knew they were looking for more finance earlier this year. Obviously, Spotify did that funding round and got a ridiculous amount of money.
A third of the world's entire GDP indeed. Or something is now in Spotify.
So Spotify raised a lot of money. Apple Music have entered the market, and we all know that the figures Apple put out every quarter. the Apple's profit for the third quarter of this year, so for 3 months, this is profit, not revenue, profit. By my maths, they could tomorrow, just from that quarter's profit, by Sony and Universal and Warner and BMG and Cobol, and still have a good chunk of money left for a pie.
And that's just the money they made in 3 months.
In 3 months. They could have... I mean, had the Deezer IPO gone ahead, they were looking for about $1 billion valuation, which I think in itself is a nonsense valuation. I'm not sure that can be worth $1 billion. I haven't done the Spotify now. It's what I don't know. It's worth $8-9 billion. Anyway.
Well, yeah, let's not get into that again.
Apple could have bought 11 Deezers with their profits. And that's called. So Apple, who have a lot of money, are now in the space. Deezer needed more money. Initially, we thought they were just going to do the usual thing, go to venture capitalists or stupid people and raise millions and millions that way. Didn't happen. And so then they announced that they were going to float. And they were going to float about a third of the company, I think, on the Euronext exchange. Is that right? In Paris.
Yes.
And this and but normally with tech startups, when Spotify floats, which, I mean, full Daniel Ek says, we're not floating. At some point, they've got to float.
Yeah, I mean, he might say they're not floating. You are hiring a lot of people who are clearly working on your flotation, so...
At some point, Spotify will float. And when Spotify floats, it will be partly about raising money, but it will also be about the early investors and, of course, the record companies who have equity as part of their licensing deals. It will be about all those people cashing in, having the big payday when they get their money back because they can now sell their shares on a stock exchange. For Deezer, it wasn't about the shareholders cashing in. It was about raising money. They need money to continue to grow and finance.
Because while Deezer is one of the bigger streaming services, it is, in fact, quite tiny, really.
Certainly compared to Spotify.
Compared to Spotify.
And if you were to throw Pandora and YouTube and things like that into the mix, they are quite a lot smaller. So they need more money. They were going to do the IPO. Then it seemed to happen very fast. It was rumoured in August.
It was rumoured, then confirmed, then announced, scheduled.
Yes. Then in September it was announced. Then earlier this month the date was finalised and all the details were given. And then 2 days what was happening. No. They said, we've changed our mind.
So, yeah, as I said, it was supposed to happen this week. They were going to try to raise 300 million euros to get their 1 billion euro valuation, as you said. And then, Tuesday night, they suddenly went, actually, no, we've decided not to do that. They blamed market conditions.
Why
which
not?
Seems worryingly vague.
the chair then spoke to the Wall Street Journal, I think, chair of the board. He gave a little bit more information and admitted that last week Pandora over there in America put out its quarterly report. Obviously, it is already a listed company in New York, and they put out their finances for the last quarter. And it had a bit of a bad reaction from Wall Street. The share price at one point, I think it was down 30%. I think it's since recovered a little bit. But so a real wobble on the Pandora share price. Even though Pandora's revenues were up, it's still a loss-making business, but it hadn't, you know, its losses were more or less what everyone was expecting. So I, as far as I can see, the reason why Wall Street responded badly to Pandora's latest figures was because they're still signing people up, but they're the growth has slowed. They're not signing people up as fast as they used to. And so analysts in Wall Street seem to be saying, oh, that's the Apple Music effect. People now are going to Apple Music instead of Pandora. It's like, well, who would say, oh, do you know what? What I have is a free-to-use, personalised radio, really quite straightforward, simple solution. But do you know what I want to do? I want to spend $120 a year on something much more complicated that involves me to be a much more full-on music fan. I don't see Apple Music and Pandora really being competitors. I mean, I know Apple have some free, obviously there's Beats One, and I think some other sort of radio channel type stuff. But I just think that's Wall Street being stupid. I don't. Whatever you think about Pandora, Pandora's problem is not a lack of users, it's a lack of revenue. They need to make more money out of the users they've got. And as far as I can see, that's sort of what is now happening. User increase is slowing, but revenues are going up. That's a good thing as far as I can see. But Wall Street people didn't think it was. Share price plummeted, and Deezer said that that's one of the reasons why they thought now is not the time for us to be going to market.
There was also Netflix put out their figures as well and had a similar thing, slowing user growth and slightly disappointing revenues. So I guess Deezer's defence would probably be that, you know, the people are worried about the streaming market now, both on the, you know, the visual and the audio side, and it's looking like it's kind of, people are going to want to wait and see if it's actually slowing down, if it's going to kind of plateau a bit, or if this is just a blip and it'll go shooting through the roof early next year. So we'll see. But he said it's better for us to wait a bit. That's what the chair said. Didier Bench is his name.
He remained a bit non-committal as to what was going to happen next. Was it a case of saying we're going to leave it 6 months, we reckon we could get more money for our shares in the spring, or is it off? He said they've got, we've got loads of money, he said. We've got the money to carry on expanding.
Money coming out our ears.
I'm pretty sure that's not what you said.
Yeah, well, why were you doing this in the first place?
A few months ago, you were saying, oh, there's a lot of interest in investing in our company and we need the money to grow. So, who knows? I mean, I think Deezer is in a very tricky position. I mean, in terms of users, I should have done the maths before we started. If you discount YouTube and SoundCloud, the big two are Pandora and also iHeartRadio, which people over here never, ever talk about. But it's nearly as big as Pandora now in the US. Then, of course, you've got Spotify. Apple Music now, even though the figures are a little bit, it's what Tim Cook says off the cuff occasionally, all the figures that we have for Apple, but Apple Music probably comes next. And then actually, Deezer, obviously one of the things we got from the IPO documentation is that the figures they put out in the past include a lot of people who have Deezer on a mobile bundle, mainly with Orange in France, who have never actually pressed play, or certainly are not active users.
Yeah, they found, well, if you're talking about one of Spotify's at over 60 million 70, in fact, 75 million total users.
I think we're looking at 100 million by the end of the year.
Yeah, and these is really looking at a few million.
Well, that's paying, I suppose.
It was paying, but it was still, I mean, it was still not even close. And a sizable chunk of those were people who had it on a phone but didn't really know that it was there.
And then, of course, I mean, the other player you've got is Napster, Rapster, which, again, is another one we tend to forget about. So Rapster in the US, Napster over here. Well, I hear a rumour that they might be coming Napster in the US. Getting rid of the Rhapsody name, apparently. So who knows? We'll see.
Then
if
you wouldn't
happens.
Have the confusion of saying Rhapsody Rapster, as you just did.
Is that what did I say?
You said Rhapsody Rapster.
Did I really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a really good name. I think that's what they should call it.
I'm sticking with Rhapsody because of my logo. We previously discussed on the podcast my very good logo that I made for them, but they've never used.
When we cover that company. And I think they said they had 2.5 million paying users. I hear it might now be getting closer to 3 million. So that puts them and Deezer not that far apart.
Yeah.
It is very tricky to be a standalone streaming music company at the moment. Spotify has the edge. Apple has the big pockets. Audio have always been very quiet on the user figures, haven't they? So who knows what's happening with audio? So
I reckon, do you think, maybe, like, we all think that audio's, like, you know, just this small player, and you're like, I can't believe audio's still going. How are they still going? Very quiet about the user figures. One day they're just going to come out and go, we've got a billion users.
Billion paying users and 84 billion freebie users. I don't think that's going to happen.
No,
I think they're going to get bought by someone.
It'd be fun if it did.
But we'll see. But it's a competitive market, and you've got Apple with all that money I keep mentioning. That's because it's a lot of money. It should be mentioned.
Their statements, every 3 months, they should just say, we still have more money than you can imagine.
And the other interesting thing is, a lot of people have talked about how a lot of the opportunities, I think, in streaming music in the next few years are actually not with the sort of Spotify-type model, £10 a month. It's those middle market services that we've talked about, where it will be less per month, but less access, less content, less functionality or whatever. Which we know audio, obviously, is dabbling with having free personalized radio, paid for like Spotify, and something in the middle. Although, actually, I think Amazon and now YouTube, with YouTube Red that we talked about last week, they're sort of now taking that mid-market by bundling music in with other stuff and then charging £10 a month, or in Amazon's case, less than that, for everything packaged together. So I think Google and Amazon could take the mid-market. Apple and probably Spotify hopefully will remain at the top of the market. Pandora, I think, will work something out at the sort of the freebie end of the market, which then, for all those other little players out there who've been trying to get that growth going in recent years, it's a tricky place to be. So it's unfair of us to write Deezer off. Perhaps they'll come back in the spring, do an IPO. They'll be worth $2 billion.
Well, maybe. I mean, it's difficult to know. I mean, it's difficult to know if they'll come back and try an IPO again. It's difficult to know how much backing they'll get. I mean, if they try a second time, how problematic would it be if you've cancelled an IPO to then get support later further down the line?
I mean, I think going, yes. I mean, other than going back to your existing investors, will Access put some more money in? But it is, I mean, whatever spin you put on it, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
to say, we're going to float, you can invest. Oh, no, actually.
That's it. I mean, yeah. So, yeah, best case, it's embarrassing, which, you know, that's not a good place to start from.
But still really big in France, everyone tells me, and actually the figures that they published there as part of the IPO confirmed that. So still a really big player in France, but despite being in pretty much every other country in the world, in fact, as we keep going back to, they once put out a press release telling us that they were launching in more countries than there are in the world. So despite being in more countries than there are in the world, still really struggling to get much momentum in a lot of countries beyond their home country, France. But anyway, you can't have shares in Deezer, I'm afraid. It also means that what would have been good about the Deezer IPO is we would have got those quarterly reports. Once you're a listed company, you have to release a whole load of financial information once every quarter, which enables us to dig in a way that you simply can't with a privately held company. That would have been interesting. Having said that, it would have then meant that once a quarter we'd have to have written that story and we'd have to have gone through all of those releases. And
true.
It'll save us time. There's the silver lining.
Yeah.
We won't have to do the quarterly, let's look at Deezer's financials. And
so in fact, best case is actually, it's embarrassing for Deezer, but slightly easier for us.
Yeah. So, good week.
Well, good. It's a good news story to start on.
Yeah.
Good. Radiohead! They're suing their old record label, Parlophone.
They are!
Formerly a division of EMI, but EMI, of course, is dead. It's now a division of Warner Music.
It is.
So poor old Warner Music now caught up in this lawsuit that's of no fault of their own.
And also because Radiohead are published by Warner's publishing company. I always got the impression that the one business partner that Radiohead always got on with well was their publisher, Warner Chappell. But now over here, they're having to sue
Burning
Warner
bridges.
Music because of evil Parlophone. So we're still to work out the exact specifics of this litigation. But of course, there have been many lawsuits, but mainly in the US, where artists have taken their record companies to court over the way that pre-digital record contracts have been interpreted in the digital age.
Yes.
So obviously there are a lot of artists out there, like Radiohead, who signed to their record companies way before digital downloads, streaming, none of that was on the agenda.
Well, we never imagined such things.
CD was it.
Yes.
CD was the final
format. That's what it was going to be
format.
Forever.
We were never going to move beyond the CD, and if we did,
it would be super audio CD.
Yeah, exactly. That was where the world was heading when Radiohead did their deal with Parlophone.
I think I own one of those.
Do you? We should dig it out and bring it in. We'll do show and tell next week.
I'm not sure I do.
On the podcast. Yeah.
Anyway, this
we're
is
on a deadline.
Important. All right, sorry, yeah.
So the record contracts don't say anything about downloads, let alone streams. And so what the record companies have had to do is apply those old contracts over to downloads on things. And the big bone of contention in most of the cases, particularly stateside, has been, what does that mean in terms of how the royalties are paid to the artists? Should they be paid the same royalty they got on CDs, or should they be paid a different royalty? Should a different royalty be agreed? Record contracts often used to refer to licensing deals, by which they meant sync. as having a much more generous split for the artist. The artist could often see half of the money rather than probably about 15 to 20% of the money. And the artists have come along and said, well, hang on a second, you've just done a licensing deal with iTunes and a licensing deal with Spotify. These should be licensing deals. Where's our 50%? And the labels have said, oh, no, that's not what we meant when we said licensing deal in 1991. And so there's been lots of disputes on this.
Yes.
And this case is similar, although, as I say, A, we're not entirely sure of the facts of the case as yet. And I think the facts of the case are slightly different, in that it's about deductions that were made off download income relating to costs incurred through the CD production.
Yes, what we know is that Radiohead are unhappy about deductions that were made to their download income in 2008 and 2009, because obviously, while they're not working with Parlophone anymore actively, Parlophone still owns the bulk of their recording catalogue, so they're still earning money. But they say in those 2 years, Parlophone deducted £744,000 based on costs incurred in 1992 and 1998. And the problem for Radiohead there, obviously, is that they don't understand why they're having money from the 90s deducted from their download income, which was never part of their contract in the 90s.
Yes. So although the record company owned the copyright and the sound recordings and therefore is allowed to take the revenue from those recordings, how that money is divvied up, how deductions are made, etc., 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 was not set out in contract. And so what they're saying is, because these costs related to CD era, you can't just immediately take the money out of our download income. We need to have a separate agreement on how all of that is structured.
Yeah.
There was no agreement, and therefore you're in breach of contract by taking that cash.
Yes,
because is more or less what it's saying. As I say, I think as this properly gets to court and they go for nitty-gritty, we'll get exact information on what the dispute is, but that's as we understand it at the moment.
Yes, because labels deducting costs from bands' income is not an uncommon thing.
No,
in
and
itself,
and it's not entirely uncommon for costs for 20 years ago to be suddenly deducted from income that's coming in now.
It's the just issue the sort is, of income that yes, this is coming from.
That there is no framework in place for taking deductions of old costs off download income, and Radiohead are saying that there needs to be. And the reason why we know about this is that Warner Music, who now own Parlophone, tried to have the case dismissed in the High Court earlier this month on the argument that often in a record contract, where there are royalty shares and deductions and blah, 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 where it explains how the label shares its money with the artist, there will also be a clause that says, if you, the artist, have a problem with the way that we've worked out your royalties, any of the various metrics and calculations, if you think we've done it wrong, then there's a deadline by which you have to come and complain and say, hang on a second, that's not right. What's that deduction? What's that split? And so on. And what Warner Music are saying here is that deadline's passed. OK, the time that you had under contract to complain about, was it 2008, 2009?
Yeah.
The deadline's over, so you can't dispute this. The whole lawsuit should be thrown out of court. And it went to High Court earlier this month. But Radiohead responded by saying, well, hang on a second. Our entire point here is that there is no agreement at all about what happens with download income. Therefore, there's no agreement about any deadlines. So, assuming the court eventually sides with us in saying we have no agreement on downloads, you can't now say, oh, there's a deadline to pass. And on that point, the court sided with Radiohead. So the application to have the case dismissed by Warner was thrown out. The case will now proceed. And it will be interesting to see exactly the specifics and the debates that happened. And as I say, although this is not a carbon copy of the big cases, I mean, obviously there was the FBT Productions case in the US, the producers who worked with Eminem back in the day, who sued for a bigger cut of digital income from Universal and won.
Yes.
And then there were many, many, many more lawsuits filed on the back of that, most of which have not actually reached court. But this case is different to that, except that it is another case looking at how record companies take pre-digital record contracts and apply it to the digital age and the assumptions they make and whether or not those assumptions are fair under the original contract.
Like you say, most of these don't actually get to court. They're generally settled before they get that far, and it's quite likely this one will be settled before it gets that far.
No fun at all.
If it's no fun, we would much rather it get to court for various reasons. One, it's fun when things go to court. And two, it means that questions have to be answered in court about things that aren't necessarily clear in the law. And that's always fun.
It is, because there'll be quite a lot of artists, I would imagine, from the 1990s with similar contracts that will have been written in a similar way. And obviously, if this was to go to court and it was all to be considered there, and if Radiohead were to win, then it could set a precedent that other artists who perhaps are not as well funded, so don't want to pursue a case on the off chance that they're in the right, those artists on the back of Radiohead winning might also be able to go that route, which is one of the reasons why the minute a record company thinks, we might lose this, they are usually tempted to do some sort of deal to stop that from happening.
And I think that's the reason that it could possibly get to court, because one, Radiohead have had a long, quite fractious relationship with Parlophone anyway.
Yes, certainly.
So might just go for it out of bitterness.
And that but began also, when, because actually Parlophone was really part of EMI, Radiohead got on very well with EMI, and then Terra Firma bought EMI in 2007, sacked all the people Radiohead liked, and they've had a pretty fractious relationship ever since
which
then.
Which is why they ended up leaving the company.
Indeed.
And also, Radiohead, I think, like to be seen as people who would stand up for the little guy. Whether it's Tom York moaning about Spotify on Twitter, or Colin Greenwood, he does quite a lot of work advocating for smaller artists. So, as you said, this might pave the way for other smaller, less wealthy artists to carry out similar lawsuits, and so they might forge ahead with it for that reason. But I think it will probably sell.
But we'll see.
We'll see.
Okay, time to recap this week's CMU approved, the tracks and the artists that Andy has been bigging up in the CMU Daily, which began on Monday with Thus Owls.
They are a married couple now. They weren't when they first formed, but Erica and Simon Angel, former touring members of Patrick Wolf's band and Lonely Deer, respectively. They've released three albums to date, and they're about to release a new EP called Black Matter, which I think across all of their albums, they've kind of honed their sound into something quite more focused each time. It was sort of, I think the first album was sort of throwing all their ideas at and seeing what stuck, and then it's just got more and more focused. And this new EP is more focused still, and they've released two tracks from it. So far, the title track Black Matter has just come out, and that is what you can listen to if you go onto the article from this week.
On the CMU website. Yes. Grimes is back. We knew that, but yes. This week, actually back.
Yeah, they've been very... Well, Grimes has... I think the preamble to Grimes' new album has been going on for about 2 years now.
Yeah, sort of doing the opposite of a Beyonce and a Barry.
Although she was talking about doing a Beyonce, like there was a report. In fact, I think she might even have said it in an interview that she was going to surprise release the album at some point soon.
And then she chose a drip feed bit of information.
Nah, actually, she's going to release it as normal. So it's coming out on November the 6th. The album is called Art Angels. She's just released the first track from it, which is called Flesh Without Blood. And it's very good. I think it shows that in between Visions, her last album, and this album, she has signed a management deal with Roc Nation and now has far more resources than she used to. The last album was recorded very quickly in a bedroom, and this is definitely recorded in a studio with access to a lot more equipment and other musicians and stuff. But she's not sold herself out in doing that.
Yeah, not still, screwed it all up.
She's not screwed it up. It's really, really good. I listened to this track, Flesh Without Blood, a lot this week.
And you should too.
Good. Yes.
I'm not saying you.
The listeners.
I just said I have listened to it.
Yeah,
I meant
lot.
The listeners.
I mean, I could again.
Well, do.
Oh, I will.
You should. Frankie Machine.
Oh, I do like Frankie Machine. He's not a prolific... Actually, at the start of his career, he was pretty prolific, and then he's slowed down over the course
well,
of...
Well, we all do.
15-odd years. But he's got a new album.
We used to write 87 stories a day in the CMU Daily.
I know, and now...
Some days we now do four.
Yeah. But he's got a new album out called Frankie Machine Has Been Shipwrecked on a Desert Island, which I think is a reference to the fact that he hasn't released an album since 2011. I'm pretty sure he hasn't been shipwrecked on the desert island because we're friends on Facebook. And
you think he would have mentioned it?
I think he would have mentioned it, yeah. But it's his fourth album since 2002. His songs are quite downbeat, but have a wry sense of humour. And he records the sound of his songs. He's kind of singer-songwritery. They're always recorded to sound very intimate. They sound very close to him as you're listening to the record. And that's very enjoyable. I've made that sound quite creepy, which I didn't mean to. But ignore me and go and get that album on Bandcamp.
It is, and it sounded creepy without our listeners being able to see your mime for singer-songwriter, which I enjoyed very much. I hope we can
was
have that.
Was that one or that one?
It was more... It wasn't strumming.
This is a great bit of audio now.
You were sort of... Yeah, I don't know. Anyway.
I looked like I was playing a ukulele.
Yeah, that was it. The comet is
He doesn't
coming.
Play the ukulele. Do not. I would never approve someone who plays ukulele. I'm laying that down now. Ban ukuleles.
I quite liked the ukulele a few years ago. It has got a bit over.
I think what happened is
Amanda Palmer's Radiohead covers were good.
Do you know what it was? I think what did it was that a little while ago I went to what I believed to be a comedy show and it turned out to be more a cabaret thing. And someone really quite annoying and earnest played a ukulele and like wandered around the audience as they did it. And it really annoyed me and I can't stand it now.
Not going back to the ukulele since. The comet is coming. We're on a deadline, remember? So yes.
We're on a deadline because the comet is coming.
It is.
They are a band who are somehow affiliated to Melt Yourself Down. Signed to the Leaf label. They mix just a stupid amount of genres together into one thing that should not work and somehow does. It's like, I don't know, jazz, experimental electronic music, post-punk, 80s dance. Just, it's ridiculous,
fun. But not like another artist I was PR'd this week who mashes together Britpop and indie or Brindy.
Brindy is
no Brindy in here.
No Brindy at all. No, this is just fun. And they've got an EP out next month called Prophecy. Check it out.
CompleteMusicUpdate.com/approved.
Get it right. Get it from a genuine site. That is the catchy name of a new campaign against piracy on the internet.
Yeah, so if you downloaded this podcast from a file sharing network...
Which, surprisingly, you can.
Or you're listening to it on Aorus. Is that how we said that? That thing that we were talking about the other week that might now be
Aorus,
dead?
Aorus, yeah.
If you're listening to this from an illegitimate source, can we just say that... Just get it right.
Get it from a genuine site.
Yeah, that's the message here.
And by site, we mean... website and or streaming service.
A platform of your choice that
or
we have approved.
Digital, some sort of digital platform. I suppose get it right, get it from some sort of digital platform that is genuine. It's a less catchy.
It doesn't rhyme. So the UK government and the UK entertainment industries, so film, TV, music, sport, I think sport are involved
sport
in this.
Sport is entertainment for some reason.
Have launched this big thing. So it's an anti-piracy campaign. There have been lots of anti-piracy campaigns over the years. They've all been awful. And I suppose, you know, acknowledging the heritage of the entertainment industry's attempts at doing anti-piracy, this is also awful. So at least they're, you know, they're not rejecting their roots. So this is the result of a thing called Creative Content UK, which launched about a year ago, maybe 18 months. It was in the lull on the podcast, so we never talked about it.
And I don't think we would have talked about it launching anyway.
Creative Content, well, we could have done, because it was that press release. Remember, it was the press release that had about 87 quotes on it, which began the single word quote thing that we do in the Steamy Daily.
That's true.
It originated in this press release. So something came.
Bit of trivia for you there.
Out of Creative Content UK. So... Creative Content UK has two sides to it. Side one is that the internet service providers, who are also involved, promised to start sending out some warning letters to suspected file sharers, like the law said they should in 2010. But as far as I can see, no letters have gone out. So there was partly enacting the Digital Economy Act was part of this, but then also an education initiative, which is a good thing, because whenever government or the entertainment industry, when they're trying to do new anti-piracy rules, web blocking, free strikes, whatever it is, you always get that the entertainment industry and the ministers who are supporting them will say, oh, we must do some education too. We must try to explain to people why copyright exists and why piracy is not a good thing. And then nearly always they forget the education bit. And that sort of falls by the wayside and we never hear any more of it. So to be fair, what Creative Content UK Initiative has done is before doing the letter sending and all of that, it has come good on the education initiative. By which I mean they handed a lot of money to a PR agency and an ad agency who made a terrible ad and did a publicity stunt.
Yeah, they...
Which, actually, now I think about it, isn't really education, so...
It's not, because, I mean, the first thing they've done is a mural...
So publicity stunt.
..in Birmingham, and they're going to do different murals around the country. Now, I assumed it would be a mural that kind of communicated something, but it... No.
I think what it is it's celebrating the cultural and creative industries in each of those cities, because without copyright and with too much piracy, but so they picked some people who supposedly had a connection to Birmingham.
No, which they did. That was fair enough. But I looked at the mural and I could not tell who any of the people were.
Yeah, he was
and
directed.
When I finally found, like, they didn't, there was no place I could see on the Get It Right, Get It From a Genuine site that it, in one place
were
said
you on
who,
the genuine.
I was
right
on the genuine
site,
Get It
site.
From a. Anyway,
not a dodgy.
No,
Get It Right,
it was
from
the genuine
site
for a Get It Right From a Genuine site. There was no place. No, I couldn't find any one place on that website that said who all these people were, because presumably they just thought you'd know. But eventually, I found all the different bits of different names, and as I found each one, I could not believe that was the person it was supposed to be. None of them looked like it was. It's not a very good mural. It's got there's a hashtag on it. I can't remember what it was, but it's not a hashtag that communicates anything about the campaign.
So
just says like content or something.
So publicity stunt. Hire a PR company. They'll give you a publicity stunt, and then the ad. Now, I in my slightly sarcastic write up of this entire campaign, to be fair,
I think the ad is quite good
in that it.
If it was 2005.
Perhaps we could go back in time.
I mean, well, we had Back to the Future Day, didn't we?
The way in which it is good
now's
is
the time.
Is they? It isn't the. I mean, there's the. You know, you wouldn't steal. The problem is that old classic piracy ad. You wouldn't steal this. You wouldn't do this. Don't pirate. Is I can only ever think of the version on the It Crowd, so I can't actually remember what the actual ad was like. But it was the one where it was equating piracy to like stealing stuff.
And that, people who steal handbags tend to buy a lot of things related to handbags, also.
So that was, I think, everyone agrees, was a terrible campaign, a completely hollow message. So at least they haven't done that.
Yeah.
However,
to be fair, they haven't.
And so basically, as you say, it looks quite dated. The line is better than the "you wouldn't steal a car, so don't pirate," although it still doesn't really work. So basically, the message is: if you all use legit streaming and download sites, then there'll be a music industry and a TV industry and a film industry, and you'll have lots of stuff that you like. But if you use dodgy sites, they use the word dodgy. If you use dodgy sites, then the entertainment industry will shut down, and then you'll be living in a grey, dim, horrible world where there's no entertainment.
Yeah, and the problem with that is that the public has been quite happily getting things from dodgy sites for nearly 20 years now, and Ed Sheeran and Adele still exist.
There's still plenty of music and film and TV shows. In fact, there's more music and more film and more TV shows than ever before. So while behind the scenes, the rise in piracy may well have created all sorts of issues, I'm not sure that message really works. So although the ad isn't awful, 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 I think it sort of is a slightly flawed message, and the publicity stunts I don't get. And it comes back to my point here. I mean, I am biased, we are biased, because we run an education company as well as everything else. We do education about music and about media and about copyright. But I still comes back to, if you want to do education, do education. Don't hire an ad agency and do an ad and hire a PR company and do a publicity stunt. And there are so many, there's so many great organisations out there. I mean, I think the starting point is to reach out to young creators, young musicians, the people who have channels on YouTube, not the millionaires who have channels on YouTube, but the thousands and thousands of people who are making a bit of money on YouTube, but not millions. Those are your supporters. Reach out to them, educate them about copyright, and then use them to get your message out, is how I would have done it. So, yeah, an education program which actually has education in it. But anyway.
Well, you noted in your write-up of this week that there is a list of genuine sites.
To get it right from a genuine site, I mean, it's not a very good site. It doesn't look particularly like a genuine site.
Well, as I said, it's not very user-friendly.
But it has the list. Remember the Music Matters campaign was the music industry's last anti-piracy campaign. That was also a bit rubbish. Well, actually, I think this one's probably more rubbish. But, well, except whatever. They also had a list of genuine sites, and I think they've just replicated it over to this new site.
Yes, included on the list of genuine sites is rara.com, which has recently gone offline. Muzu, which is
still online, to be fair.
Still online, but
did have a creditors meeting.
Yeah, going into liquidation. And MySpace, which, I don't know.
When I saw MySpace on the list.
It is online.
I went to look. I couldn't work out how much music it now has. Because I did a search, and it struck me that it was not a particularly big catalogue anymore. But anyway, yeah, I think the moral of this story is get it right. And do a proper education campaign next time.
Once again, not a very catchy name.
It's not. But put it on a pin badge or paint it on the side of a building, and who knows, it might work.
just time. Well, actually, not really time at all to run through some of the things we didn't have time to talk about.
We're on a deadline.
But let's run through them anyway, really quickly. Tidal naming rights.
Tidal has taken the naming rights of a venue in New York. So the Barclays Center...
Not actually the naming rights of the venue.
Well, it's called the Barclays Center, so they can't have it. Barclays have got it.
But a specific configuration of seating at the Barclays Center in New York.
Yeah.
When it's set up as a theatre, it's the Tidal Theatre.
Correct. Jay-Z, obviously, who owns Tidal, has a long relationship with this venue. He opened it when it opened a few years ago. He was originally a shareholder in it, then he sold his shares. Tidal have actually had a partnership with the venue for a few months now, but the naming rights bit of the deal, the fact that 22 nights a year, it will be known as the Tidal Theatre.
Tidal events will be held there.
And the big Tidal event that happened last week was.
That was held there too, but they're holding other events there. Anyway, moving on.
Except I just want to say one more thing on that.
What?
Do you think it could end up being that, like the Mercury Prize, in years to come, there'll be this venue in New York called the Tidal Theatre? And
no one remembers what Tidal is.
No one will remember what Tidal was. But anyway, that's something to look forward to.
Spotify in residence.
We didn't even mention Tidal when we talked about streaming services earlier. That tells you.
We've already forgotten what it is. Spotify, I remember what that is.
I do. I mentioned it earlier.
In residence.
I don't even know what that is. What's Spotify in residence?
Spotify in residence is sort of. It's a sort of a thing they've done already before. I mean, unofficial. Like, there was Playdio started this, which was launched by Kudos Records, which is a distributor. And basically, that was a thing where you could record a podcast, basically, and then you could put music in it by recording the podcast in seconds.
That's right. So turning Spotify into a radio station by putting together a playlist, then recording links to go between the tracks, uploading the links, and then it becomes a sort of on-demand radio show within Spotify.
And then Spotify did that with Billy Bragg. Billy Bragg has the Billy Bragg radio show on Spotify, which is still going, I think. Whereas that's basically... It's a profile which basically releases albums, which is one track Billy Bragg talking, and then one track of music, etc., etc. And now Spotify is ramping that up with Spotify in Residence.
So they're doing more of it.
So they've basically got four curated playlists, which will be updated monthly, with Jungle, Steve Jones from the Sex Pistols, Big Nasty, and Mike Skinner's new project, Tonga.
So there you go. So obviously Spotify earlier this year said, we're bringing radio, we're bringing video, original programming. Not actually seen any of that happen, but this is something happening.
It's something exciting. I'm not sure it's what they were really announcing, but there's something they're doing. Anyway, Pandora has reached a settlement for pre-1972 recordings. We do not have time to get into that again, so let's not even talk about it further. SFX is considering bids.
It is.
Not just Robert Silliman's bids. Some other bids too.
Someone else wants to buy SFX.
So that's something we'll probably come back to. And fans of the Blurred Lines trial and general lawsuit around it with Marvin Gaye versus Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams, etc. The depositions from Robin Thicke and Pharrell Williams have gone online.
Yes, so these were testimonies they gave pre the trial, but which were quoted ahead of the trial and in the trial. They are quite amusing. You should go and watch them. A bit cringeworthy, though, but also quite funny. Hey, Adele's back!
Adele is back, and I feel that is something we're talking about, because Adele is the saviour of the music industry. You don't need to get it from a genuine site. Adele will save us.
She is here with a new record and breaking records with her new record. It's all records.
She's all records. So, yeah, annoyingly, last week on the podcast, we were recording it, and I said that it was rumoured that Adele's album was coming out on the 20th of November, and then we got back to the office and a press release had arrived saying that that was confirmed.
I think we got seven press releases. Well,
we got quite a lot of press releases.
Everyone was press releasing it.
It is Adele.
Everyone wants to be part of the Adele thing.
She's also released the first single from the album, Hello.
Which we had a snippet of. Is it the track we had a snippet of with the X Factor ad?
Yes.
But it's not the cover. It's not the Lionel Richie cover.
What do you mean the cover? It's not a cover of the Lionel Richie. It's not the cover. I mean, I'm sure there's more than one cover of Lionel Richie's Hello, but this is not a cover of it.
It's an original song, I'm afraid.
Yeah, sorry about that.
And people seem to like it.
It's not my fault. I'm not going to follow. I shouldn't apologise.
You kept dissing the video because there's talking in the video.
There is talking in the video. It was really annoying.
So don't watch the video. Go and
but
listen
to
the track.
Millions of people are watching the video. The video has been incredibly popular. In fact, as we record this, it's had about 130 million views, considerably more, I would imagine, by the time you listen to this. It reached 100 million views in 5 days, which is the fastest Vivo video to do that. Wrecking Ball took a ridiculously long 6 days. Stupid Miley Cyrus.
Embarrassing.
Embarrassing indeed.
She didn't have any talking in her video. That was the problem.
Exactly. It's broken, as we say, various records. Had the highest hourly views that YouTube's ever had. At one point hitting 1.6 million views in a period of 60 minutes. The previous record holder for that was only came a week earlier, which was the new Star Wars trailer.
Who cares about Star Wars? Adele's back!
Star Wars only managed a pitiful 1.2 million views an hour.
Rubbish.
Absolutely rubbish. Her 24-hour peak was 27.7 million, which beats Taylor Swift's record of 20.1 million with Bad Blood. So basically, Adele is more popular than Star Wars. Adele is more popular than Taylor Swift.
Does that mean we can stop talking about Taylor Swift? I mean, I'm not as excited about new Adele album as I think everyone else on the planet is. I mean, I'm not down on it in particular, but it's like, oh, a new Adele album. But if it means we could just stop talking about Taylor Swift, then that would be a good development for me. I'm bored of Taylor Swift.
Okay, we'll stop talking about her.
Okay.
Let's talk about Adele a bit more.
Yeah.
So basically, Adele is very, very popular, more popular than anyone else. And I think that's worth discussing. How and why? Like, why is Adele... Like, I don't actually know the answer to that question.
Whenever you see her, I've never met Adele. Whenever you see her interviewed, she comes across as a genuinely, you know, exactly the sort of person you'd love to have a drink with. She seems to come across as a really, really nice person. And I suppose she's putting out music that is quite mainstream and quite accessible. Although, to be fair, for mainstream accessible music, it is actually quite good, given that it's going to such a mass audience. Also, I suppose, we sort of criticise Adele for taking quite a long time to get this record out. She's not a prolific touring artist. But almost, I think we talk a lot, how in the digital age in music, there's no scarcity anymore. Everything's constantly there. And the fact that Adele hasn't been so prolific of output and hasn't been so prolific with touring perhaps almost makes people more excited and wanted to her. Almost she's the opposite of Taylor Swift. Has never been, you know, completely overexposed beyond the campaigns around the initial album.
Yeah, so I suppose, I mean, we talk about Taylor Swift doing very well with selling downloads and CDs, etc. But she is very much out there as an artist. She's a very much in the public eye. Whereas, yeah, Adele, in between albums, is very private.
And also,
doesn't
actually
release albums very often.
Although we remember that last album as being a huge album, because it was a ridiculous huge album, but it was one of those albums that, it wasn't that there was, it was massive right from the word go. It was one of those albums just kept growing and growing and growing, so that like 2 years afterwards and it was still top of lists. It's like, who's still buying this record after 2 years after it was released? Whereas I suppose this album will have that massive worldwide hype from day one, and it will be interesting to see whether that has any impact on that sort of the personality that Adele seems to communicate through the way that she does stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think it was around the last album. So XL bought us over. She's signed. That's another thing, isn't it? She's signed to an indie label. That's nice.
It is. Sony are involved in the US, but you know, yeah, but, led by but, Beggars but, and XL.
Yeah. So XL boss Richard Russell was tweeting about the last album. How everyone was kind of going, like 2 years after it came out, everyone was going mad about how popular this album was, and he was saying, let's put this in perspective. If you sell 5 million albums, that still means that most of the people in this country, let alone the world, are completely indifferent to you and don't like you enough to buy your album, possibly don't like you at all. So that's like, she's a very popular artist, but she's not like, not everyone in the world is in love with Adele.
And unless she plays big venues, she doesn't tour enough to know exactly how many tickets she can command.
That said, I think everyone now probably has heard of Adele. Everyone in the world has heard Hello. They've all watched the video. They've all been annoyed by the talking. They've all talked about her flip phone, which apparently is romantic.
Says the director of the video.
Putting an iPhone in a music video makes it look like an advert, he said.
It distracts
and
people.
And it would be too distracting. And then everyone talked about the flip phone he put in instead. So that was
failed.
Sort of backfired. But anyway.
So every single person has now seen the video, even though that slightly conflicts with the figures that you were quoting earlier. But I'm buying this. Every single person in the world, poor me actually, has now seen the Adele video.
They could all crowd around one computer.
That's true. It's true.
There was another little story that came out before we sat down to record the podcast that Adele is apparently negotiating, her agent, William Morris Endeavor, is negotiating a sponsorship deal with Apple for a tour, and as part of that negotiation requested that Apple stock CDs of 25, her new album, in its stores.
And Adele being one of those artists who, although people are downloading it as well, still is shifting a lot of physical copies of her records.
And Apple, quite unsurprisingly, said no. Because why would Apple stock CDs? I mean, they don't even have CD players in their computers anymore.
And
they famously are heavily involved in digital music.
Although this story has sort of been spun as Apple shun Adele's suggestion they sell CDs.
Where would they even put the CDs?
I'm sort of thinking that her agents who are doing the sponsorship around the tour have a generic list of things that they put to sponsors, and one of which was, you could stock the CD in the store. Because, I mean, who, as you say, why would you begin to suggest that?
Who's going to go into the Apple store and go, Adele CD? I'll definitely buy that with the computer I cannot play it on.
Yeah, Apple being famously, you know, one of the first computer manufacturers to start shunning CD drives. So, but anyway, there's been a lot of Adele news in the last couple of weeks. I say now I'm bored of Taylor Swift. Hurrah for Adele. I have a feeling that come January, I might be saying, can we have more Taylor Swift, please? There's going to be a lot of Adele happening on the telly, on the radio, and all over the place between now and Christmas.
Yes, so maybe we should stop talking about Adele, because there's probably a lot more Adele talking to be done. Which artists don't you want to talk about? Why not tweet us about them? At CMU. And if you're a new listener or just a strange person who doesn't like things to be easy and you haven't yet subscribed to this podcast on whatever you're listening to it on, just hit the subscribe button.
But only on a genuine site. We'll have no subscribing on non-genuine sites.
Yeah, yeah. So get the CMU podcast right. Get it from a genuine podcast delivery platform. That's our new campaign.
It is.
Run a TV ad.
I'm going to get it graffitied on the side of our office.
The mural will have me, Andy Malt, and Chris Cook, and I think Matt Peaty can be on there as well. To see a picture of that mural when it's done, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at Unique Facilities, the CMU podcast is an unlimited production in association with 7 Digital.
Well, it's interesting because it's a digital royalties case, although I'm yet to get to the exact bottoms. That bottom? That doesn't really work.
Ray, you want to get to Radiohead's bottoms? I don't think that's appropriate for this discussion.
I'm going to say that again. What was I talking about?
I don't know.
It's all going to be fine.